Social editor for the Eagle.
Do you remember her name?
Yeah, Gladys Greenaway at that time. But when she got married, her name was Gladys Clark. And I wrote for the Sentinel for a while. I wrote the social column for the Sentinel for a while.
You were telling me you also wrote for the Sentinel.
Yeah, but just a little while, because I wasn't paying anything. And I told him, I said, that takes up too much of my time to write. And I have a son to educate, and I got in the social column. See, I went around to lots of social affairs, and I'd have to get to write down the people's names and the events. And it took time to do that, you know. And while I'm doing all that, well, I'm missing out on a job where I could be making some money. So I finally told him, I said, I'm sorry, I can't do it anymore, because I said, why can't you pay me? Well, I haven't started making any money yet. I said, well, I'm sorry, I just can't do it anymore.
So having afternoon tea parties like this, was that common?
Yeah, yeah.
In a certain, this very elite social circle.
That's right. Now, this was a ladies' yard right across the street from where I lived on Hooper. This was that section where I bought this house with $300 down. That was a nice section along in there for blacks. And so this lady had a nice little backyard. She had a little canopy, see, in her backyard. And we were back there in her backyard. And this lady here, she was manager of the Levada Ballroom, where I told you we could have the parties in the basement of this apartment house. This lady's husband was a dentist. This lady was a daughter, was a chiropodist, is foot doctor, isn't it? Chiropodist. Her daughter's a foot doctor. Oh, this girl's husband was popular too. Her name is Hazel Washington. I've forgotten what he did. Washington. But he was quite popular, too. And this little girl, she was a pretty little girl raised by her, living with her father. Her mother had died, and she lived with her father. And she joined a little club that was sponsored by an old wicked lady. And this lady, I joined the club for a short while, because she was get young girls to join this club, and we'd go to her house. Her house was a clubhouse, and we had to put in like 50 cents every meeting to buy liquor with, because she loved to drink, and she'd drink up all the liquor, and I didn't even drink. So after about four meetings, I said to the old wicked lady, I says, I don't drink. I don't think I should be putting in money to buy liquor. Well, you're a club member. You have to do what the others do. And the way she said it made me mad. I says, no, I don't either. I says, I just won't join. I won't stay in the club then if I have to do what the others do and I don't want to do it. I say, I think we ought to have a vote on it. She wouldn't let us vote on it, you know. Talking about I had to do it. Because I'm a club member. She's just making us buy liquor for her, you know.
Did the club have a name?
Yeah, it was called We Moderns Club. We Moderns Club.
We Moderns?
Uh-huh.
What was this during Prohibition?
Yeah, you could buy liquor then. It was okay.
Oh, it was legal?
Yeah, it was legal to buy. Yeah, she had us buy liquor every night. And we meet at her house. And she was a wicked old woman, and she'd invite single men. We were all single girls. Of course, my husband had died. I was a single widow. And she'd invite single men over to meet her girls. We could have turned out to be bad girls if we hadn't had character of our own, you know, because she was setting us up. But I guess we all had sense enough to not fall for what she was trying to make us do. And 'cause I got out, I didn't stay in there very long. But I was going to tell you about this little girl. So one night she asked for a glass of water. She didn't drink either. And she asked for a glass of water. And that old woman went and gave her a glass of gin. And gin looks like water when you put it in a glass, you know. And she was so timid and naive. She stood there and drank that whole glass of gin to make them think that she thought it was water. She was dumb. And then when she finished drinking it, everybody just laughed. And she said, "Ann!" And everybody just fell out laughing. And that girl went home that night and died from the results of drinking that straight glass of gin down. And I called her father and told him why. But he never did anything about it, but that old wicked woman. And she didn't do a thing about it. She didn't let him, she didn't tell her father she was sorry or anything. So the next time I saw her, I wouldn't even speak to her. And she says, "Wonder what's the matter with Verna? She won't speak to me." I didn't have nerve enough to tell her why, but I should have. I should have told her why. But I was so mad at her, and I was mad at the girl's father because he didn't do anything about it. Poor little girl just lost her life because this old dumb woman gave her a glass of gin.
Here's number 27.
That's a wedding. That's the brides. Four brides. Laura Slayton. She was a popular young lady who loved to start clubs. She started many social clubs around here in L.A. She started the Orchid Girls Club and California Clubs. And she always started lots of social clubs.
She's there in the center.
Yes. Laura Slayton is her name. Oh, and this is Leon Washington's first wife. And so she, and we were all young brides, and she gave this luncheon for us.
What's her name?
Laverne Handy was her name at that time.
And she's up on the top left.
Yes.
And then below her is...
Let's see. Velma somebody. Okay. I can't remember that. I can't remember all their names.
Okay.
Velma. If I hear them, I would remember them. And that's me. And this is... I know her, but I can't think of her name either.
That's okay. And what was this occasion?
It was a bridal luncheon, as she called it. It was a luncheon for the new brides. We were all new brides. I had gotten married again there.
When was that?
That was 1934.
And who did you marry?
I married a Dr. Everett O. Cox. And but he was working as a postal clerk, but he was a dentist. He had come here from Arkansas, and he, in order to practice dentistry, he'd have to go back to school out here. But he didn't, he got on with the post office, so he didn't go back to school to get his license to practice dentistry here. In fact, he said the dentists weren't making much money anyway. He could make more at the post office than practicing dentistry. So he was a postal employee, but he really was a dentist from Arkansas. So Dr. Cox. Moore, this girl's name was Velma Moore was her name. Curtis Moore was the fellow she married. I think he worked at the post office too. Curtis Moore. Now I can't think of this girl's name. But we all had just gotten married. She had just married Leon Washington, publisher of the Sentinel. Now Laura had this luncheon for us, called it the bridal luncheon.
How long were you married to Dr. Cox?
About 4 years. We didn't get along so well. He was too much of a dictator for me. But that's when I went back to high school and graduated. He let me go to school. I went back to school while I was married to him and graduated from high school. And when I graduated, he gave me a trip to New York. My son and I, we went to New York for a lovely trip. And while I was gone, he remodeled the house, and that's what made me fall out with him. He remodeled the house. He was buying a house before I married him. And while I was gone, he remodeled the house and didn't tell me he was going to remodel it. In other words, he sort of treated me like a piece of furniture. Didn't want me to have any say about anything. He wanted his ideas. You know, I think a man should let his wife put some of her ideas on something, you know. So I said, well, gosh, I think I should have had something to say about this, you know. So I said, well, if that's the way you want it, then you can just have your old house.
Number 28.
Well,
oh, okay, we're still going.
Is it now?
Uh-huh.
Now, let's see. Oh, this was still a group working to help build that hospital, the colored hospital that we were trying to build. And we used to call these the Fantasias Ball, you know, costume. People would dress up in different costumes. And it was a fundraiser, too. You pay so much to come. And we had dancing and food and a show. It was usually enjoyable. Everybody really enjoyed it. That's me right there.
You've got a hat on.
Yeah, uh-huh. Made out of a tray. I took a little tray that's made out of straw and made a hat out of it. And that was out at the Friday Morning Breakfast Club out in Glendale.
Friday, what was that?
Well, it was a place where they rented out for parties and things.
And
they called it Friday Morning Breakfast Club in Glendale.
And which group was sponsoring the fundraising for the hospital?
It was the Westview. The name of the hospital was Westview. We call it the Westview Gill. The name of it was called the Gill, Westview Hospital Gill.
And you all were doing the fundraising.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was president of it.
Oh.
When we broke up. We had 2-3 presidents, but near the end, I had been elected the president. This is another fundraiser. We were having a, for the Westview Guild, we were having a fundraiser at the Club Alabama. This was a dance at the Club Alabama, the Westview Hospital Guild at the Club Alabama. That's the orchestra. And that was over on Central Avenue.
And do you remember what year this is about?
Well, let's see. I guess that would be probably in the 50s, I guess. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the 50s.
You must have raised a lot of money for the hospital.
We did. We raised a lot.
Events.
But it took lots of money, too. Because in the meantime, we were working and raising the money. We had expense going on because we had a secretary, paid secretary, paid her $300 a week because we had to have a secretary for the hospital to keep up the records and everything, you know. And she was very good. She was working long hours for that $300 a week.
$300 a week was a lot then.
Well, not really, because people were working in the shipyard making more than that.
Who was working in the shipyards?
Well, lots of women had jobs working in the shipyards in those days, you know.
That must have drawn a lot of people to come to L.A.
It did. That's what made lots of people come in here. Yeah, they were. And we felt lucky that she stayed with us, you know. But I guess she didn't want to work in the shipyard.
Who's number 30?
Now, this is the Fizzot Litmore Club. This is the oldest black women's club in L.A. I think this club started about 1910. And so this is one of their club meetings we had at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion down there.
And what did this club do? What was the goal of this club?
Well, phys means physical education. They worked on the, you know, they'd have people come there sometime and teach about physical education. And then about artwork, phys art, and literature, lit more. Now, what was the more for? It was to improve the body of the members and the minds, you know, of the members. And some of the old timers started it, you know. And this lady, she's one of the older members.
What was her name?
I think her name was Bessie Williams, I think.
And what kind of events, what kind of things and activities did the group do?
Oh, they gave lots of teas, and they always had programs at every meeting. They'd have someone to speak about literature, read a play, a story, tell a story. And then if it was about artwork, they'd have someone to bring their artwork and show it. And they'd have someone to come and demonstrate physical fitness, about how to reduce or how to keep your body in good shape. So it was for improvement, you know.
Did it have a large membership?
Yes, they did. They had a large membership. And I was a member for a while, but I got tired of this old women. I was getting old myself, but I still was younger than they were.
Is it still in existence?
Yes, it still is. They meet about once a month, and they have lunch, have a lovely lunch. They go out to places, you know, like the Dorothy Chandler or some hotel and eat, and you pay so much, each member pays for his lunch, you know. And then they have a lovely program. They usually have a nice program. And if you invite a guest, you can invite a guest, and they pay extra for their guests. And then they have a garden party once a year, this garden party. They have a nice program, you know, and refreshments. It's all like a tea, you know.
Number 31.
Now this is the Golden Keystroke Club. This is a group I've worked with. We work with people who've had strokes, and they're recuperating, and they're able to stay at home. And so we help the family with the members once a week. We have a program at a church recreation room. Well, we fixed lunch for them, for the strokies. So it gives the family a relief, you see. Like, if you got a strokie in your family, you can bring them over there to this meeting once a week. And they can stay there for about 3 hours and gives you a relief, you see. And then we give them lunch and have a program for them. And then once a year we have a luau. They dress up like this with these ladies on, the long, colorful dresses. They call them luaus, you know. And they have nice, delicious food. And we charge for that, too. That's the way we raise our money, in order to give them this free lunch once a week during the year. Now, attorney Audra Jones started this group because her husband had a stroke. He died, but he lived a long time. And she was just saying how nice it was to get relief once a week, you know.
And she was an attorney?
Yes, she was an attorney. Trying to see if her picture's on here. She should be on
here. And when was this group started?
This group was started about 1964.
And it's still going?
Yes, it's still going.
Are you still a member?
No, I got tired. Yeah, that's me right there, but I don't see Audra. She should be there somewhere. I got tired. When I broke my leg, I said, oh, I'm too decrepit to be around helping other people that's decrepit. I have to give it up. I got to take care of myself.
Are there other clubs that we didn't see pictures of that you were members of? That you are a member of?
Yeah, that I was a bridge club called E Pluribus Unum Club. You don't have...
These are entertainment pictures, pretty much.
Yeah, like, sure.
That's okay. If you can just tell me a little bit about some of the other clubs that you've been a member of.
Well, there's a bridge club called E Pluribus Unum Club. I stayed in that for about 20 years. That was the bridge club. And I joined that right after my husband died. And I joined that about 1927. And I stayed in it until about 1949. No, about 1951. I stayed in that until about 1951. That's right. And it was a little bridge club. They're still going, and I still go as a guest, but I'm not a member anymore. And that was lots of fun. Young women, we all grew up together. And then there was another bridge club called the Bel Air Bridge Club. I stayed in for about 20 years, but most of them are dead. They don't meet anymore. Most of my bridge clubs, we stopped meeting because so many people died, you know. So I don't really belong to any right now, but I still play bridge quite a bit because most of the members died or either got so sick they couldn't come out anymore.
Number 32.
Now that's Bob Paris. He's a singer, and he was the guest at my home. That's in my new home when I first built my new home. He was singing up on my little stage. I had the stage built in my playroom.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
Just for this sort of event?
Yeah. No. Just that was my playroom. It was 20 by 30, large playroom, and I always figured, well, if I have a party, well, the person entertaining will be up above the crowd, see, if they're on the stage.
Wow, that's fancy.
Mm-hmm.
This was the Redwood House?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And you're playing the piano?
No, that's a friend of mine. Her husband was a minister. Can't think of her name right now. Well, she's deceased now. And she was a pianist, and he was a singer. He's a professional singer, too. Mm-hmm. And these are the Mills brothers. These are the Mills brothers. They were my neighbors. Don, that's the one that lives around the corner from me. That's his two brothers. Harry, Don, I don't remember that one's name.
And he gave you this photo?
Yeah. And Brown, he wasn't the brother, but he played the guitar for them.
Did you go see them perform?
Yeah. And when they were in town, he used to room at my house temporarily, you know, when he was in town, because they didn't have room for him in their homes, since they live around the corner from me. So this one had room there for me.
You used to rent out rooms a lot.
Uh-huh, yeah. I said the room was paid for my home. And these were entertainers, too. And this was my roomer.
What's his name there?
A-M-I-D, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Emil. Now, that's the group he danced with, but he was my roomer. And he was a dancer. He was a very good dancer.
Was this a well-known group?
Yeah, but they traveled around a lot. They weren't so well-known right here in L.A. because they traveled around a lot. But they did dance. They danced here, too.
Do you remember where they performed?
Well, like downtown, the Million Dollar Theater, you know. They used to have lots of vaudeville acts down there, the Million Dollar Theater.
And this was a vaudeville type of group?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Number 35.
Now, this is another one that was a professional dancer, too. What's his first name? Jelly Bean Johnson. Yeah, that's right. Jelly Bean Johnson. He was a good dancer, too.
And how'd you know him?
Well, just through Emil, because he used to come over to see Emil. This is 1931, huh? Oh, I guess I was Cassius at the Lincoln Theater. I probably met him at the Lincoln Theater. Because he used to have lots of people dancing at the Lincoln Theater. Yeah, when I was Cassius at the Lincoln Theater.
Mm-hmm. And then finally...
Now, Jack Johnson, I met him when I was Cassius at the Tivoli Theater. He was there in person one night. And... I mean, not one night, one week, one whole week he was there in person. And so I was single, and I thought he was single because he was trying to flirt with me. In fact, he flirted with me, and he gave me some tickets to come downtown to see him, because when he left the theater there where I was working, he was at another theater downtown. So he gave me some tickets to come downtown to see him. And... So I went downtown to see him, and then he wanted to take me out. And that's when I found out he was married. And I said, I don't know what possessed me to ask him that, but I did. I asked him, I said, are you married? And he said, yes. And I said, well, is your wife here with you? He said, yes. I said, well, you got your nerve going to take me out, and you got a wife, and she's here with you? Oh, well, she doesn't care. I said, but I care. I don't want to go out with no married man. He was a big old flirt.
So he gave you the picture instead?
He had already given me the picture when he was working at the theater where I worked. I was the cashier, and he gave me the picture when he first started working there.
And about what year was this?
1941, when I was working at the Tivoli Theater. The Tivoli Theater.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, I didn't get to ask you, was the about the tablecloth that you designed.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me about how you thought of the tablecloth idea?
Oh, well, I had been saving proverbs over a period of years. Every time I see a proverb that I liked, I'd cut it out and save it.
Okay, we're recording.
You want to ask the question over again?
We were talking about your tablecloth that you designed.
Okay. About 5 o'clock one morning, it looked like the Spirit woke me up and says, get up and design a tablecloth with those proverbs you've been saving. So I went and got my box of proverbs, picked out exactly 66 proverbs that I liked. And it turns out that there's 66 books of the Bible. So I chose 66 proverbs to put on the tablecloth. And I designed it, and I have them screen printed on with paint. And it's on a material that's a fabric, rather, that's washable. And so it really makes a nice conversation piece when you're eating. And you can plan a program around it. And you don't need any table decorations with it because that's the decoration within itself, just reading the Proverbs. So I felt that the Spirit of God directed me to design the tablecloth because it's food for the mind. I first said food for the soul, but a friend of mine says, well, I think it sounds better. He says food for the mind rather than food for the soul. But whichever way you want to take it, it's good food. Besides food for the stomach, it's food for the mind or food for the soul. And I sell them for $35, and it makes a nice gift for your pastor or your mother or your friends or for yourself. So I hope to one day to get them in some store where they won't be so prejudiced, where they won't mind who designed it or anything. Because I've had problems trying to get them in a store. I'd like to have them in a store, but I haven't been successful in finding a store that will handle them. But if I take time and go around to the churches, I can sell them, but I just haven't had the time to devote to them. But I'm glad you like it. You bought one of them, huh? You enjoying it?
Very much.
Good.
How did you, do you still collect proverbs and write them down?
No, I haven't been doing it lately. I've been doing so many other things.
But that's something that you had done for a long time?
Yes. I had done that for a long time.
And are they things that you would read or things that you would hear?
Oh, things that I would read.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I was attracted to them. And I would just save them.
And how did you get the idea of putting them onto a tablecloth?
Well, it seemed like to me the Spirit of God just told me to do that. I hadn't decided what I was going to do with these proverbs. I just knew that I liked them and I had collected them. I didn't know what I was going to do with them until 5 o'clock this morning. The Spirit woke me up and says, go design a tablecloth with the proverbs. So it looked like the Spirit of God just told me to do that. So I felt it was spiritually moved to do that.
And so far, who's bought the tablecloths?
Mostly churches. One church bought 25 of them.
And what do they use them for?
In the dining hall, mm-hmm. on their tables, in the dining hall. They say they save money on decorations because they don't have to buy flowers for the tables. Because they just use the tablecloths, and everybody just gather around and read the proverbs, so they don't worry about the decorations.
That's really nice. Last time I was here, right before I left, we were talking a little bit about the restrictive housing covenant and how in 1948 it was broken, and we were talking about how there were many more opportunities for African Americans to buy houses in different areas. But I remember you said, right as I was leaving, you said, yeah, but at the same time, before that time, we used to all be together in a very sort of tight community, and that had changed after legislation was changed. Could you tell me a little bit about that and how it was before and after that time?
Oh yeah,
how do you feel about that?
Well, it seemed like we were more close knitted. We felt like we needed each other more, I guess, then than we do now. So we live so far apart now, you have to have a car to go and visit each other, and you also have to have appointment because we didn't have TVs then. Now people have TVs, and so you dare not just drop in on people like you could then because we didn't have TVs, and well, radios were very popular, started becoming popular. And so you could drop in on people then. They were glad to see you, but they're not glad to see you anymore. So I guess the TV has changed lots of that, you know. And then, of course, not having people who don't have cars makes it harder to get around. And some people have advanced more financially because they have better jobs, too. So they can't keep up with the Joneses. You know, if you make more money, you can't buy what the Joneses buy because you're not making that, you know, income isn't that much, you know. And there's a lot of jealousy, I guess. So there's lots of different reasons, I suppose, why some people get behind and lose, don't keep in touch with each other. But I know the distance between friends makes a big difference. You're so spread out.
Mm-hmm. Great. Verna, is there anything else you want to add to this interview? I've pretty much finished the questions I was going to ask you.
Well, you know, I was thinking today about the different problems that my father had through life, and he had to, in his own little way, how he tried to break down the different prejudices. Well, there were people that did mean things to him, and there were also people who did nice things for him. So if it wasn't for the people who did the nice things for him, I don't know what would have become of us. So I appreciate the ones who did the nice things because that really made us survivors. And I'm glad that my dad taught me not to hate people for the wrong things they did, because some people do things out of ignorance. They don't realize what they're doing and how mean they are. And they think they're doing right, you know, when they're really doing wrong things, but they don't always realize. So I'm glad that I don't have any hatred in my heart for people, because two wrongs don't make a right. And I feel so sad over the events that happened in this rioting that happened here in Los Angeles in May. I just feel so sad I can hardly talk about it without crying. It was so sad that they tried to burn up Los Angeles. I said they cut off their nose to spite their face, because we need to improve ourselves too. But on the other hand, we also need help along the way. We need someone to guide some of us, because we haven't had the opportunities that others have had. So we just hope that we'll learn to live together and help each other, because God intended for us to help each other.
When you say we need somebody to help us guide, to help guide us, do you mean like a new, very strong leader in the community? Someone, you know, like Martin Luther King, or do you mean more on a spiritual basis?
Well, we need both. We need the spiritual guidance, and we also need educated leaders to help guide, too. You know, there are lots of spiritual leaders that that are uneducated. They have the good heart and the good intentions, but they don't always know the right way to do it, you see. So if they have the educated person to sort of guide them, that would be good too, you know. So I think we just need everybody to help each other wherever you see help is needed. Because we were born to help each other. That's what the Bible says. And God also says, vengeance is mine. It's not yours. So if someone does you wrong, you don't go and try to take care of it. Leave it up to me. I'll take care of it. And I do really believe that. Because I know the man that burned my father's garage down, he never had any good luck afterwards. Papa didn't do anything to him. Even the law wouldn't arrest him, and they knew what he had done. They wouldn't even arrest him. But he has never had any success, so I've been told. He's always been a poor man. So vengeance was God's. He took care of him. And my dad and the rest of us prospered, had a happy life, which I'm thankful for. And I've enjoyed talking to you.
And me to you. Thank you.
You're welcome.